Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Fort City. We are back in the building. The cafe is open. Let's go. The calling number is 929-477-2759. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chef. And the early start, but it's still prime time here in the kitchen, 7 through 9. But we'll be conducting this show from 7 through 8 and trying to get out of the kitchen as best as possible, talking about the news and notes and things around the sport world, or the basketball world, if you will. Because when you're in the kitchen, you're already in the sport world, at least when you're within Sports City. I'm going to kick this off while I get my people to settle into the cafe as best as possible. Here are a couple of things that I wanted to talk about before I got into the thick of things. And talking more or less about the Zion Williamson situation, where they're addressing him and saying that he's actually been getting better, going through conditioning and training and therapy, things of that nature. I'm a little frustrated because I wanted to see him get out of the gate and play ball as early as possible, but he's not able to play early. And I think that he'll end up being around December, January as a start. But I think with all of the time that he's going to end up missing, he will miss out on the rookie of the year. And one of the dishes that I had that I wanted to throw around the kitchen does speak or spill into at least my early thoughts on how things position for the rookie of the year this season within the 2019-2020 season. And there are at least three of them that got my eye right now, but one in particular that I definitely wanted to talk about. And I want to save that for when people get in line. But the one thing that I can throw out of the way and get this out of the way is the way that the Lakers have gotten off to an interesting start in their first seven games. Their first loss of the season came at the beginning of the season, losing to the Clippers. And they have not lost since. They're on a six-game winning streak, and the way that they've been playing ball now, as a big-time unit that you're going to have to deal with game in and game out, is that they can play that killer lineup. And this is the pressure that I actually put on Vogel, Coach Vogel, seeing if he can get the team to go out there and play some team ball, and they're getting it done, i.e. with LeBron on an interesting streak. He has three straight triple-double games, and these are notable games. These aren't just, he's getting 21 points and 10 rebounds, 10 assists. No, he's putting up big numbers, and you're going to have to respect it now, because at one point when you were looking at him, and I'm one of the people, when I was looking at it early, and it was like, I don't know if LeBron can be the point to run the show. He's actually transitioning this into an interesting situation until they get Rondo back, because Rondo is due to come back as soon as possible. So I want to know if Rondo ends up taking over the reins of running the show, or if LeBron stays there, because they're off to a very hot streak right now, winning six after losing opening night to the Clippers. And that depth lineup that I'm talking about, with how they can go big and, kind of drown you out, at least keep you off the boards as much as possible. If they have JaVale and Anthony Davis in the game and LeBron being in the paint, they can not only just clear out space, but they got a ton of length down there too. And coming off the bench and inspired as ever is Dwight Howard as well, too. So they got at least, let me just say, at least three bigs, because I'll count Anthony Davis as a big, even though he's their power forward. But he plays, a big man's position. He plays defense as well. So that's one thing. But knowing that they can play that lineup, let LeBron come across half court, whether kicking the corner and watching out for Green or KCP and getting these guys to get shots if he collapses the defense, or just to work these guys within the paint, whether it's JaVale McGee or letting Anthony Davis work from the outside and come inside and try to create. is another thing or interesting standpoint that the Lakers have. They're, like I said, they're off and running. I wonder who ends up slowing this locomotive train down. But at this point in time, right now, it looks like the Clippers are the lone team that can stop them, and that's early out of the gate. And this is why the Lakers are not at full strength. But don't forget, just like I said on a previous show, they're still waiting for Boogie Cousins to get back. Boogie Cousins is out with an injury, too. So it's like they have even more ammunition at their disposal. And I'm wondering how, Coach Vogel works this. And, whoever inspires him, whether it's Jason Kidd or, Hollins, if, one of the guys that he has alongside him, to get this thing rolling or running the right way. So I definitely want to give the Lakers their due, especially the way that they, came out questionable out the gate, and a couple of their games that they played outside of that loss, it was questioning what was going on. But right now, this is looking like the problem that we all thought of, where even including myself, I really think that the Western Conference Championship or Western Conference Final, however we look at it, is going to go through the city of L.A., whether it's in red, white, and blue, or whether it's in purple and gold. But right now, the purple and gold are the stronger, more potent team, and they are on top of the Western Conference as well. After that game, they won that six straight. Okay. One of the interesting situations that I do have within the show is looking at how the Suns have been playing out of the gate, too, as well. And the Phoenix Suns, I think, were going to be a surprise team. It wasn't one of my teams that I thought would be, within the top eight, but something that you had to watch. And they've come up with some interesting wins, and they have an interesting game tonight going up against the Miami Heat, in which Devin Booker has actually come out and said that he's taken Tyler Herro under his wing and kind of, work with him, and these guys are both knockdown shooters and playing some lights out ball out of the gate. And looking at the Suns, I mean, the Suns are in the middle of the table right now, at least sitting at four in the Western Conference. I'm wondering if they could keep this capacity going the way that they've been playing, even though everybody's kind of tied at the for second, if you will, because Dallas is tied with the same record and so are the Nuggets. I'm wondering if the Suns could keep this up, because they did lose pieces upon this roster. But, looking at it, at the grand scheme of things in the Western Conference, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of teams that they're going to have to play in and out and not wilt, if you will. And they're on a three-game streak, putting up a good amount of points per game. And I can't really take too much away from the Suns at this point. If they can stay within the hunt, I like the way that they look. But there's a ton of teams in the Western Conference that, like looking at the Western Conference scheme of things, there's teams that are on the outside of the top eight that could definitely make a play as being a successful playoff team or making a run at the latter portion of the season. But it is early. It is early. But right now I did want to give the Suns their credit because they are doing, I don't want to say the unthinkable, but this is something that a lot of people didn't position these guys as being one of the better teams within the Western Conference. But it's early. It's only the first seven games of the season, but I do have to tip my hat for the effort that they have been given at this point in time. And the head of the monster has to be Devin Booker in the way that he's off to this start. And I wonder if the team feeds off of this or, if they get caught playing the big teams and lose their momentum, lose their thought and gall and approach these games, if you will. So that's one. Shout out to my cousin, too. A lot of people don't know that I have a cousin in the league, I have a couple in the league, but the one that I'm closer to is Charlie Brown Jr., a.k.a. Buddha. He got called up, and this was after John Collins was suspended from the league due to a performance-enhancing situation, and he just got called up. So I'm hoping my cousin could go out there and do the best that he can, even though this is the time of the Vince Carter farewell tour. And I want to see him get out there and play. So I'm wondering if it's more or less a situation where the Hawks are going to, wait till the score gets out of hand, they can start putting him in games or letting him go out there and play, because he's an effective defender. He can shoot the ball very well, and he can control the ball as well. So I'm hoping that he can get his time out there on the floor, and he also get to play with Vince. That's also another lasting legend, if you will, if he could go out there and play with half man, half amazing. But I did have to give my shout out to my cuz, because He just got called up yesterday, even though they did lose the game up against the Chicago Bulls yesterday at home in the Phillips Arena. So I did have to get that out there for the premise of the show. One team that I was actually concerned about, even though I feel like things will turn around at the, you know, as things start to pick up in the early portion of the season, and that is the Minnesota Timberwolves. And knowing that Cat just got into the fight and everybody was worried about, well, you know, Cat going up against Joel Embiid, that was a crazy situation or scenario, and more or less was a wrestling match. But now while Cat is back out there on the floor, the Wolves are still picking up losses while their superstar is out there. And they are down point guards as well, with Shabazz Napier being injured and also Jeff Teague. They're actually going to the D League to pick up a point guard as well. So the hard part about this is having these guys learn on the fly without any severe leadership at the point guard position to show them as much as they need to, because they're dealing with injuries early, let alone having to get the urgency played or put into play, because they can't fall too far in the Western Conference, because, you know, the bottom feeders of the Western Conference can be tough outs or a tough game-by-game or tough day-by-day matchup. And the Wolves can't get caught up in this, let alone I'm going to just put the onus on myself. I was one of the people that said I think the Wolves do get to a postseason bid being in the playoffs, just to give that preseason prediction. And the game that they are losing as of late, it doesn't spell to what I think may end up being the best for the Wolves at this point in time. I do have to see more out of Andrew Wiggins. I feel like this is the pressure that I have to focus or look toward, because a lot of these teams are going to look toward Cat to come out there and be like, well, he's going to get his, but don't let everybody else get theirs, and kind of let everybody be cold while Cat, you know, kind of scores the ball or get the rebounds and play possession basketball. So I don't know. I don't know. I think once they get at full health, we get to see more about the Wolves. But right now, this is a questionable situation while they are outside of the top eight, and it is early. But I think they definitely have the talent or potential to do better. I really do think they have the talent or potential to do better. Okay, the elephant in the room, or the situation that's been actually going crazy in the league, is the Kawhi Leonard situation in the game that he missed last night, going up against the Milwaukee Bucks, in which he sat out due to load management and trying to rest. There are so many people within media, so many people within the league that are speaking upon this, including Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan came out and said to his team, he said, you guys are paid to play for 82 games. So I think he's already stressing the fact that if they are not injured and notably injured, that they need to or will be out there playing ball. And looking at Kawhi Leonard missing the lone matchup in the Eastern Conference scheme of things, because I think they only play each other once, you know, in each home, respectively, once in L.A. and once in Milwaukee, that a lot of people want to see that matchup, especially how things went down last year in the playoffs with Kawhi Leonard's Toronto Raptors at the time were successful in knocking them off and advancing to an NBA final. So I do give him credit for at least having the Raptors be ready for that scenario. But, you know, Giannis had his, you know, challenging mark to try and go out there and try to knock off the Clippers. But there was no Paul George, of course, that we know has already been injured. And there's also a situation where Kawhi is resting due to the load management scheme of things. Like I said, there's been so many, you know, news platforms and people speaking on why he hasn't been out there playing. So, Kawhi, you know, hopefully you get out there. Hopefully you feel much better. They're stressing the fact that his knee has been bothering him. And I don't want to put nothing past Kawhi. I don't want to call him lazy, because to me, at this point in time, I think he is playing better ball than LeBron. Everybody's saying LeBron is still the best player in the league. I beg to differ. Like, to beat the man, you got to beat the man. And he's done what he needed to do, knocking off the Golden State Warriors and having that dynasty, if you will, break up. So I do have to tip my hat to what he's been able to do at this point in time. One more topic that I wanted to get into that actually I was stressing it earlier and I was trying to stay away from it is the Memphis Grizzlies, the way that they've been able to play ball at this point in time. They are under 500. But the player that I've been wanting to talk about is my early season rookie of the year, and Ja Morant. The comfort that he's playing with, and the tenacity he has been playing with. And a lot of people call him Russell Westbrook 2.0. I love it. But the one thing about him that's also good is that he plays control. Like, he doesn't play, you know, over-aggressive and get himself caught in the traps or get the ball stolen or, I don't know, I don't even want to say get blocked at the rim, because if somebody jumps with him, it might look tragic for you trying to attempt to block him. But he's under control. He knows how to score the ball. He's actually a threat to a lot of these guards in the league, and he scored the ball last night and letting these guys know that they were too small to guard him. And he's the rookie. And he's the rookie. Like, he doesn't even have his solid grown man size yet and, you know, strength. So if he's feeling confident in his game right now, I just can't wait to imagine how he looks in, you know, 2 to 4 years, or let's just say 4 to 6, when he is at the male's peak and strong as he can be at the position, and he already jumps like crazy. So if he has that flick to go with the crossover and his quickness and speed, this could be dangerous on trying to play the Grizzlies on the in-and-out situation. And knowing that the Grizzlies were tougher with Gasol, Zebo, and Conley, all three of them are gone now. And it's just interesting that the Grizzlies were able to rebound and bounce back that fast after losing some big pieces to this roster. To me, right now, Ja Morant is the leading candidate for Rookie of the Year. I don't want to just automatically just give it to him, but the way that he actually played Kyrie and coming up big in that game and kind of going toe-to-toe with Kyrie, and in his last matchup that he had going up against the Timberwolves and winning that game up against the Wolves, and letting the crowd know that these guys are too small to defend him, he already has a breed of confidence that, like I said, he's a control. If they're going to call Russell Westbrook 2.0, he's a control Russell Westbrook. So I like that, and I got to give him his credit due, at least at this point in time. There was another topic that I wanted to talk about, and that was the Golden State Warriors. And I know that a lot of people have been watching them as while they've been dealing with bouts of, you know, their strain with the injury history, knowing that they have Klay missing for the season. Kevin Durant left after he got injured in the NBA Finals, and he's in Brooklyn right now, and he's also out for the season. But you also have Steph, who just hurt his hand, and he broke his hand. He's out for the next 3 months. Looking like he'll be back within the month of January, February. And Draymond just injured his fingers as well, and he's out for some you know, time. In which they had a matchup up against Portland, and Eric Pascal put up a 36-point night to help his team win. I'm wondering who else outside of, let me just say, D'Angelo Russell, because I don't know if the consistency is there for Eric Pascal to help carry this team, but they do have the pieces. They have the notable, great, and legendary Steve Kerr. Hopefully he can conduct his offense to play strong ball, get the ball scored like they're known to do, and compete within the Western Conference. But right now, I feel like this is an uphill battle for them, especially without their, you know, household name players being at least Steph and Draymond at this point in time. Okay, well, I was trying to sit and wait for Archie. He's not giving me any inkling of being here. I had a lot to try and feed him. I wanted to see how he felt about this, especially the Ja Morant situation, because I was real comfortable with putting him as, you know, the leading candidate for, you know, in the running, if you will, Rookie of the Year. But stay tuned. We will have the Aaron and Timeless show that will be airing tomorrow. And we have a big guest coming to the kitchen real soon, which will be taking place on Tuesday. We will have them back in the kitchen. Well, the guest will be here soon, too. We do have a caller in queue calling in from the 310 area code. What's your name? What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. It's Tom. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm literally just tuning in. So if you let me know what you guys are chatting about, I could probably hop in.
Okay. I was all around the board right now. I was trying to save a lot of the talk for my co-host, but he's not giving me any inkling that he was here. So I'll throw one at you. The first topic I had was, how do you feel about Ja Morant out the gate? I was saying that he is the leading candidate for Rookie of the Year, especially with the play that he's been able to play. Not looking at the schedule, the standing on where the Grizzlies stand right now, but the way that he's been able to play at this point, do you have him as one of your leading candidates, or do you throw somebody else in the picture for a rookie, or, you know, a quality candidate for Rookie of the Year?
He looks good. I mean, I'd like to watch him a little bit more, but I think kind of everything you want to see from him so far, I think in the sense you always want to see that the speed, athleticism, and like everything else is kind of translated to the NBA in the sense that sometimes these guys, especially when they're coming from, you know, a lower level college, they can look incredibly quick. When they get to the NBA, you know, it doesn't look as fast because they're around elite athletes. He looks just as fast. He looks really good. His hops are crazy. I definitely want to see him a little bit more. Defensively, I haven't really paid that much attention to him, so I'm really curious to see that. But Memphis definitely has a pretty solid young core, and I think you know, they've rebuilt pretty well. They're definitely not close to where they need to be, but I'm seeing everything I'd want to see from him. Do I think he could win Rookie of the Year? I think with Zion injured, 100% he could win Rookie of the Year. I mean, I think prior to Zion getting hurt, I think, you know, betting on anyone else to win the Rookie of the Year would have been insane. But with Zion out, I mean, it's a pretty open race. And, yeah, I mean, I'd certainly consider him to be one of the leaders, if not the leader of the pack there.
And see, and the reason why I brought this up, right, because I look at, and I do have Royce in queue, so I'm going to get him in here, but I'm going to just claim this one. The game that he had against Brooklyn, where he was actually going back and forth with Kyrie, and the aggression that he was showing toward Kyrie and basically letting him know, like, not only am I not the typical rookie, but I'm not backing down from the presence of you. And the game that he had last night up against the Timberwolves, in which I know the Timberwolves are struggling because they don't really have good point guard play because these guys are injured. But knowing that Cat is out there on the floor, knowing Wiggins is out there on the floor, I mean, you do have to worry about some notable players. But the way that he played last night, having 26-4-4, and at one point he went to the rack, and I think he finished with a dunk. But when he turned around and he looked at all of the Wolves and turned around to the crowd, and he pointed, like, with his hand on top of a small kid, letting them know that these guys are too small. And I'm like, he already has that in the bag to let these guys know that he's not playing around. So I did want to throw that around the kitchen and see how everybody felt about John Morant, because there was so much hype for him coming out of college. But knowing that he's out here proving it right now, like I said, I don't want to look at their record because the Grizzlies are in rebuild, but the way that he's playing ball, I think they're going to be fine at this point in time.
For sure.
Okay, Royce, welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good. Timeless, thanks for the reminder. Time got away from me. Apologies to Sports City and the crew. Man, I heard y'all talking a little bit about the Memphis Grizzlies and Ja Morant, the season that he's off to. I'm assuming it was a conversation about whether or not he could win Rookie of the Year. And, I mean, look, I think it's all possible. This Grizzlies team is not the best team in the league, so ample opportunity is available. Kind of reminds me of my 76ers back when they had Michael Carter Williams. It wasn't a lot of great expectations maybe upon him and where he was drafted, but with opportunity, the ball in his hands, he was able to put up a, you know, an amazing season. He's not duplicated that since then. However, you know, the talent of Ja Morant and being, you know, the unquestioned franchise player, and I don't think that they're looking to, you know, use him as a placeholder this season. Not only does he have a legitimate chance at winning Rookie of the Year, he has the opportunity to have, you know, a 10-year NBA career, you know, similar to the way, you know, Mike Conley, his predecessor, did there in Memphis. So he's shown himself well in, you know, the early season against, you know, some talented players. The Kyrie Irvings, you know, and others had a great game last night against Minnesota, got his team the win. I was a little bit surprised by that, but it just goes to show that, you know, talent, you know, wins in this league.
You said Wiggins is weak, right?
I said talent wins in this league.
Oh, talent wins in this league. I was like, okay. okay. I was like, well, damn. Like, I was calling Wiggins. I was like, if he called the week, I'm like, damn. Well, no, the reason why I said that, I didn't just say he's rookie of the year. I just said the leading candidate, the way that he came out the gate right now. And I was wondering if somebody had a name to throw toward his, you know, toward him, as I was saying at the time just now. He's impressive. Okay, throw a name out there that you know, within the realm.
PJ Washington for the Charlotte Hornets.
Exactly,
And you know, Charlotte's going to be on TNT tonight hosting Kemba Walker's return, you know, with the Boston Celtics. I'm not sure, I hadn't checked recently. It was talking like maybe PJ might miss some time, but look, if PJ's ready to go, PJ, in my opinion, is numero uno on the board. Like, he's catching everybody by surprise in terms of, you know, this so-called rookie of the year race. I think it's too early to maybe, like, pick a guy based on what they've done in 7 games, I think maybe it is, total most teams have played. But, you know, Ja Morant, expectations to compete for it, yes. PJ Washington, no, you wouldn't say that before the season tuned up. Like, there's no expectation that he's in the race, but is he winning the race right now if I'm measuring it? Yes, because he wasn't expected to be there, and he's outperforming guys on his team that we thought were going to have, like, a breakout year, like Miles Bridges. I thought he would be actually playing better at this point in the season, knowing that there were a lot of changes in guys sitting on the sideline to create minutes and opportunity. But it's PJ who's delivering. So if there's a competitor, it's PJ Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually throw 2 other names out there. So I think as much as everyone loves to pile on the Knicks, I would actually say Barrett's looked good. I don't think he's looked perfect, but I think he's looked really good. I mean, he's averaging, what, like 18 and 6 and 3. He's playing a lot of minutes, but he's still, like, he looks like he could be very, very good. So I think he will be in the running. And then the other one, like, once again, and I'll bring him back up, if Zion Williamson actually does come back, even if he misses 2 months of the season, and even if they're restricting his actual minutes, I honestly think Zion could put up like 7 minutes a game. I really think the guy is that physically dominant. So until he's named out for longer than just these 2 months and we find out that they're not just being careful with him, you definitely can't write him off because he's an absolute monster.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not counting Zion out by any means, but I know they'll hold it out against him because he's missing significant time. And the one thing I was looking at with Josh, like, the one thing that I'm giving Josh a leg up is he's in the Western Conference where it's a boatload of talent that he's going up against, and he's not scared. And the way that he's been playing ball up against the notables, against the notable guys, it's not like he missed a beat from college making the transition at the point, or if they move him to the 2 and have him go to the lane. Like, he's doing everything that's necessary on the team that is in the rebuild. Like, at least Charlotte was in the thick of things, even though they got rid of their biggest piece in Kemba and walking another player into the door and having him as a rookie trying to fit in to the pieces, and he's doing well. Ja Morant is in a situation where he has to take over, and he's doing well, even though the record doesn't read it, but he's actually playing good ball at this point in time. And just like I said, it's early, and I just wanted to just say, not to say, oh, who's the rookie of the year right now? I'm not doing that. I'm just saying more or less the guys that have your eyebrows raised at what they've been able to do as in the transition from making their way from the college ranks into the pro and not really missing too much of a beat. But I do agree with the PJ Washington situation. He has been doing work down there in Charlotte. But the way that Josh been playing, especially that game he had last night up against the Wolves where he did more to scoring than assisting or getting everybody else involved, but he did just enough what he did to take up against a Minnesota Timberwolves team who's struggling to put wins together, to be honest. They're struggling to put wins together, especially after the fight.
I also think that if you want to talk about a dark horse guy, Eric Paschall for the Golden State Warriors. I don't actually think talent-wise he should be anywhere near the top, but given that they're basically a G League team at this point, he's going to play like 39 minutes a game. Like you may look up and be stunned at the numbers that guy's averaging by the end of the year simply because they don't have any other basketball players.
This is the difference, right? I know that he has talent because I'm a Big East guy, and I've seen him because he was a Villanova guy. So I know he has that in the bag. But looking at the way that he's been able to fit in, at least in that game up against Portland, like I was stunned that he ended up with damn near 40 up against Portland and helping that team win. I know what he's capable of. He can put the ball in the deck and get to the rim, and he could shoot, but I didn't think that he could play at the clip of the way that the Warriors play ball. So it's early, and knowing that the Warriors are basically begging for anybody out of the stands and in San Francisco, if they want to go back across the bridge and get people at the Oracle outside to come help them play ball, Pascal has been doing his thing. And like I said, I've been watching this guy since he was a Wildcat, so I know what he can do, but I didn't think that he would be as strong and successful as he is right now, at least in that showing up against Portland. Russ, how do you feel about the Pascal chance?
Well, look, he had a great game on his birthday. I watched the game last night. I guess you could say he shot his load because he struggled from the field. This team is absolutely atrocious. They're horrible. This is why I said, you know, so many for the last few weeks, timeless, that they're going to miss the playoffs. They just are lacking in talent, and guys are that they do have, they're new to the NBA. Like, they're literally trying to get their feet wet and figure out what it is to go against a James Harden, a Kyrie Irving, a LeBron James, and the whole host of superstars that the NBA possesses night in and night out. And, I mean, you're talking about guys trying to deal with their energy and emotions. They're in awe. They're probably playing some of their idols. And it's like, wait a second. I'm really a Golden State Warrior, and I got to be good, and we suck, and, like, because Steph's not here, Klay's not here, KD's not here, Draymond's not here, like, Iggy's not here, like, nobody's here but me. I'm not that good. Like, I'm good enough to be in the NBA, but I'm not that good. It's tough.
I don't know. It's tough for me to say that he's not good. I just feel like these guys are given the opportunity to go out there and play ball, and he was knocking down shots. And that's in that Portland game. And to be honest, it's tough to look at Portland right now because now they're out without Collins. And Collins is out for, I think, 4 months with that surgery too. So that was right where he was taking advantage in that game right now. And now I feel bad looking at Portland because there's always going to be those two faces and CJ and Dame that's going to have to carry them. And they took advantage of that. Because the other players, you know, 3 through 5, are going to have to try and own up and play, you know, man up and play D or come up with their buckets as they need to. Because they can't have Dame and them go off for 30 and 40 point nights every night. These guys are going to get tired as hell by the time the turn of January, February comes around. And I think Golden State took advantage of that. And especially Pascal, where he basically had to turn an M&M and lose himself, if you will, in that moment. So that's how I feel about Pascal. But I don't want to say that he doesn't have the talent. I don't want to say he's garbage because he is a good player. But I think this is more of a desperation situation in Golden State. Even the way that they tried to make that comeback last night up against Houston, and Houston closed the door on them also, it's tough to watch the Warriors where they were the dynasty that nobody felt like they could slow down. And now with they're dealing with the injuries and people not being there, Iguodala's not there, the Warriors look worse than when Tim Hardaway left. You know, like, I don't know. That's how I'm looking at it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead. I'll get to the next topic. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this is a situation where teams aren't sneaking up. So, for example, Denver's struggling. Certain teams are struggling. Denver's struggling. Portland's struggling. Why? Because they're not sneaking up on the league anymore. Everyone knows that you're good. You were games away from, you know, being in the Western Conference Finals. Or you were basically 4 games, they end up getting swept. You know, Portland, 4 games from being in the actual finals. So now you can't sneak up on anybody. You're getting everyone's A game. So it is for the Golden State Warriors in the flip. You're not sneaking up on us that you're chicken soup. We know KD's not there. We know Klay's on the shelf. We know Steph's on the shelf. We know Draymond's on the shelf. We know you lost Iguodala and Livingston. Looney's injured. We know this is not the same Warriors. So we're going to beat the crap out of you. They're not sneaking up on the league with being bad. Like, everyone knows the Warriors are bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't feel bad for them. They beat the crap out of the league the last five years. I don't feel bad for them at all.
Brutal. Why don't you feel bad for them? I feel bad because it's like I want to see somebody knock the Warriors off. I don't want to see them like, this is the thing, and I love using this. Well, not saying I love using it, but I like painting this picture of how Kobe Bryant fell apart. Like, I wanted to see Kobe get knocked off the horse. I didn't want to see him get broken down with, you know, a leg injury, then his rotator cuff, and then Achilles. Like, we watched Kobe break down physically instead of him, you know, watching some young guns take him off the floor and he couldn't handle it anymore. And looking at the Warriors, they're losing it physically instead of, you know, watching people basically run them out of the gym or big boy ball them and they can't handle it. So I feel a certain way about how I've been losing games at this point in time. So I feel, you know, I feel bad for them that they're not competing at the capacity that we're known to see them play at. They're losing because they're injured. Like I don't feel it's right, but I understand when, you know, fans of people like us look at the game and like, oh, they used to bash us around. So, like, it's time for us to bash them around. Like, I don't want to be fortunate while they're injured. That's the way I'm looking.
Well, it's not just that. I think that it depends on what Warriors era you're looking at. Like, I would actually say the Kevin Durant Warriors era. The reason I didn't like that is that as much fun as it is to talk about free agency and trades like that, like, basically the last 2 to 3 years of the NBA, all of the focus has been on trades and free agency because at the end of the day, like, unless there was a serious injury, which happened last year, multiple serious injuries, no one was going to beat Kevin Durant, Curry, Green, Iguodala, Thompson. Like, it wasn't going to happen. In fact, like, I don't care how good Kawhi Leonard was. If he was up against a fully healthy Warriors team, that's probably a 4-2 series win for the Warriors. Maybe it goes 7. Maybe it goes less than 6. But, like, so I think just the reason – I also think the reason I don't feel bad for the Warriors right now is the team that they have left over. An ACL injury is not what it was years ago, right? In fact, an ACL injury, you see a lot of guys come back actually stronger. Steph's injury is just a hand injury. It's nothing long-term. They have a Russell who's a trade piece. And I think what the Warriors this year actually have, like, a lot of, like, 96, 97 Spurs vibes to them where, like, David Robinson gets hurt. They're randomly terrible for the year, even though they have a really good team. They basically tank. They end up with Duncan, and they're off to the races again. I don't know the NBA draft that well for this year. I don't know if there's, like, a standout guy. But, like, I mean, you're looking at a Warriors team that very easily next year could come back fully healthy with a top 3 to 5 draft pick, plus D'Angelo Russell, who they can keep or trade or do whatever they want with, like, the reason I don't feel bad for the Warriors right now is this is maybe the best thing that's ever happened to them. I don't think they were necessarily going to win the title this year, even as a fully healthy team, though they might have. I think they still might have been favorites. But they could come back next year as a legitimate favorite. And now that Kevin Durant's not on the team, I really appreciate them again. Like, because you'll kind of notice this year, we're not talking about free agents or trades or things like that. We're talking about basketball because, once again, there are a lot of teams that could win the NBA title. Whereas last year, like, no matter what you said, it was always like, well, unless all the Warriors get injured or one of them gets injured, like, we basically know how this is going to end. So it's nice to have kind of competitive basketball back again.
Is there anything that you'd like to add to that before we get away from it?
No, sir.
Okay, so I want to see how you guys feel about the elephant in the room situation, because I was speaking on it before I got you guys here. And the elephant in the room is the Kawhi Leonard situation with the load management and with him resting. Now, knowing that this guy is one of those franchise players, or not if not, I want to say one of the better players or one of the best players in the league, if I'm addressing it the correct way. And I think that he should have a rapport, whether with the coaches or the organization, the correct way on, you know, when and how he's going to rest. And nobody knows his body, so he knows his body best. But he's having a lot of people come out and speak on, well, this was a game that they had to, you know, see where their measuring stick value was going up against the Milwaukee Bucks. How do you guys feel about this with him resting up against a top-notch team? I don't want to even say quality. I have to give the Bucks their due. Up against this Clipper team, especially while Paul George is set to come back within the next 3 to 4 games anyway. Roy, I'll start with you first.
Well, I didn't actually see Michael Jordan's quote. I was told about it. And so to paraphrase it, you get paid, or I'm paying you for 82 games. And I think that needs to be the sentiment around the league. I think load management needs to go away. As someone who pretty much, you could say, was raised on basketball, you know, players like, you know, Dr. J, guys in the 70s, in the 80s. I mean, man, these guys had to be hurt. I mean, like, really, like, injured. There was a difference between being hurt and being injured. If you're hurt, you can play. If you're injured, you can't play. Now, with load management, now, I'm not a fan of it. And for Kawhi Leonard, I get it. He has, I guess you could say, what's the word I'm looking for? He kind of has like a trump card, if you will, in that he went to Toronto, worked out a low management plan, and said, hey, if I miss X amount of games, I'll be there in the playoffs and deliver a title. And he did. So now people are thinking, well, if we listen to the player and give them days off when they say they need extra days off, we got a better chance at winning the title. And I'm like, yo, come on. And like, how many players single-handedly could have the type of impact that Kawhi had? And Kawhi doing that last night, here's the thing. Was it a long season? Did he play until June? Sure he did. Did he miss 22 games of the regular season last year? Yes, he did. Is this the beginning of a new season and they're just 6 or 7 games in and he's already resting? Do I like it? Absolutely not. Because it's bad for basketball. It's bad for the fan of a Kawhi Leonard that doesn't get to see him go head-to-head against Giannis at home. What about that kid from Los Angeles who doesn't get to see Giannis take on Kawhi in L.A.? He's got to wait to watch that game, maybe on TV, when they go and play him in Milwaukee. I mean, like, this stuff just got to stop. So, no, I'm not a fan of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Tom, how do you feel about it?
So I actually think I'm probably going to have the minority take on this, but I'm kind of on the opposite end, right? I think that here's kind of how you have to think about it, right? When any of us sit down and talk about basketball, like the championship, like hedged off of scoring 37 a game, or we think James Harden was the greatest basketball player of all time, right? These guys are not judged off their regular season. They're judged off of winning championships. And I think the reality is you even kind of hear the NBA admit this. 82 games for the regular season is too many. It really is too many games. It's an amount of games that's put in place so the owners can make money and so that the NBA can get a larger television deal. And I think the NBA has even acknowledged that 82 games is probably too many, right? And then I think on top of that, Kawhi Leonard, like, he didn't say he wasn't going to do this, right? Like, whose fault really is it? Is it Kawhi Leonard's fault, or at this point is it the NBA's fault for booking a national television game with Kawhi Leonard in it on a back-to-back when you know this is what this guy does. So, like, I think until we start deciding to judge these guys on the regular season and not how many championships they win, and we just judge them off of how many championships that they win, people don't consider Charles Barkley, like, probably where he should be because he never won a championship, right? People will say LeBron is nothing compared to Michael Jordan because Michael Jordan has 6 championships and LeBron has 3 and has lost X, right? Like, and so these guys' goal is to win championships, not to win regular season games. And there's no doubt in my mind that if you play 60 regular season games as opposed to 82, you're fresher by the time it's time to win championships. And so if you're willing to give up home court advantage and things like that, and to be dead honest with you, I don't think home court advantage matters for the Clippers because I think the Lakers are their primary opponent. And I think even if the Clippers get home court advantage, all of the games are going to be Lakers home games anyways because 97% of the city is a Lakers fans. So I think that maybe they even recognize that too. And so, yeah, I mean, look, I'm probably in the minority there, but that's really how I feel about this. Like, until the NBA steps up and does something about the 82-game season, which is not necessary, and until we as fans stop judging these guys exclusively on championships, then who are we to say that they shouldn't be trying to do everything they can to win them?
Well, I would say, like, I agree, you're probably in the minority, but I think that you opened up a lot of stuff there. Let me see how I can maybe, unpack some of it. So, like, the owner's point, I'm like, look, the owner makes money, but so do the players, and it's a revenue-sharing league. You know, the players benefit from having 82 games, these ridiculous contracts. And I'm not mad at anybody getting any money, but if you're getting your money, then again, this is why I side with Michael Jordan. You're getting that money based on an 82-game season. See, the only thing that's guaranteed for every player is the schedule of 82 regular season games, whether you win or lose, whether you're elite talent or your G League talent, you're contractually obligated and your compensation is for 82 games. Anything extra is what you actually work towards through effort and availability. And you're right. Someone chose to make the narrative about team and individual greatness sum it all up in, well, how many rings do you have? And so what happens is we don't appreciate as we really should. If you are a part of, to me, that younger class or generation of NBA fan who didn't see the NBA before Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. So I think that depending on who we're talking to and who's listening, like, I'm a fan of a guy who has what it takes to earn the chip, not low manage his way to the chip. And the funny thing is, I'll be honest, from looking back at Shaquille O'Neal from playing fantasy, and I started getting into, you know, guys' player cards and all that, you know, look, Shaq in Orlando with Penny, he had a lot to learn. Something Shaquille O'Neal and whoever it was in Los Angeles, when they went on their three-peat, figured out that Shaquille O'Neal at 65 regular season games was good enough for them to three-peat because Shaq, it almost looked like it was in his contract. Like, he only had to play 65 regular season games 3 years in a row, and then in the postseason, he didn't miss a game, and he was, like, the most dominant player in basketball for 3 years in the postseason. Is there anything wrong with that? If no one's watching and no one knows what's happening, no. But is there something wrong with that now that everyone's watching and everyone knows what's going on? Hell yeah, something's wrong with that because I'm still a fan. Like, people are spending money and time, and I want to see you play. There's no guarantee that okay, the one game that you choose to play in, you don't get hurt, and now all of a sudden you're not in the playoffs, whether your team shows up or not. Now you can't be a part of the playoffs. Kevin Durant, he's there, he's playing, all of a sudden now he's hurt, he misses, you know, a series and a half almost, tries to come back, gets hurt again, now he's out for a whole nother season, and so the league is on this media tour where Kevin Durant is popping up on everybody's podcast and TV program, giving his views and opinions. Man, I don't care about your view and opinion, you're still a player, I want to see you play. But somebody thought that his legacy really was going to come down to how many championships he had. And I just think that we're measuring some things wrong, but it's a great conversation. I don't think there's really anything wrong with it, but I understand we might be on different sides of it.
No, for sure. And I, you know what? I think you make some really fantastic points there, especially about the fact these guys are getting paid to play 82 games. I didn't really think about it like that. And I think you're definitely right. And I think, the only thing that I would say is that, you know, sometimes we, because it's sports, we think of it differently as a normal job. But like, you know, it's, for example, if Lou Williams or Landry Shamet showed up and said, Landry Shamet's a better one. If Landry Shamet shows up and says, I'm only playing 63 games this year, load management, they tell him to F off, right? It's just Kawhi Leonard's gonna lead super. Kawhi Leonard's an elite superstar. Just like any job, like on, whether it's right or wrong, the guys at the top of the chain just get away with more stuff than the guys at the bottom of the chain. And so, you know, I think that that's just the reality, I guess. What are the Clippers going to do? Say, oh, Kawhi, you know what? Go sign with the Lakers because we want you to play 82 games a year. No, they're going to say, fine, 65 games a year, sign with us. You know, like they're – That's life, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. That's an excellent point. And that's exactly what we've been talking about. And I think we have to keep talking about that more, I think, across, you know, sports channels and network conversations, is who's really calling the shots, you know, when it comes to the personnel. Is it the GM? Is there a boss? Like, who says this is your job? We expect you to show up for work. Does the owner, like Michael Jordan's the owner. So Michael Jordan can come out and say, well, I told my guys you're getting paid for 82 games. Will the owner of the Clippers come out and say, Kawhi, I'm paying you for 82 games? Or did he already have the conversation and said, look, hey, man, all I'm paying you for, deliver the Clippers a title. I want to be the owner when we win a franchise title for the very first time like you did in Toronto. And if that's the arrangement and the agreement they have, then, you know, everything we talked about is just hot air. Like, we just talking, you know what I mean? Because they already have a plan in place. I don't know, but, yeah.
Hey, I just feel a certain type of way, and Royce, you rebuilt a big anger back inside me. You made me mad just now, because at one point when Shaq came out of LSU, I loved Shaquille, especially when he was in Orlando. Once Phil got to LA, I did not like Shaq at all, because nobody could beat him, not Rick Smith, not the Dikembe Mutombo, and I don't care who they had in New Jersey, whether it was Kenyon Martin or Aaron Williams, or the soft redhead guy. I can't even think of his name right now. It escapes me. I think it's McCullough, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they already was getting beat up.
Yeah,
they couldn't deal with Shaq. Yeah, Tom McCullough, he was getting beat up. They couldn't nobody deal with Shaq down there. And it was like, you're right, and you guys both are right. We didn't watch while they were resting. We just see, oh, Shaq is sitting out. Shaq was sitting out against the Kings or something. And it's like, okay, the Kings won in the regular season game. But once the playoffs came, he was calling them Sacramento Queens and calling Eric Dampier Erica. And I was like, man, this dude is just too crazy. And he was well-rested and ready to take it to dudes. And it's like, okay, so is Kawhi sitting out this game up against the Bucks because he's going to have to overexert himself and be ready for another big-time matchup down the road? Because I think tonight they have an interesting matchup up against the Blazers. And is he resting himself for, you know, CJ and Dame, or – You know what I'm saying? So I'm you know, it's just a thought. It's just a thought.
Yeah, I think what the weird thing with actually Kawhi is, and this is what's upsetting as a fan base, but if you were actually planning to sit this guy, it's pretty smart. What they're doing is, because I think the other game he sat now against the Jazz on the road and against the Bucks, which are two totally losable games. And so what you'd want as a fan is, like, I want to see Kawhi against Giannis. Like, how awesome is that? But what the Clippers are probably thinking is, all right, if we have to only play this guy 65 games this year, let's take any of these coin flip games where we might lose and say, screw it, let's lose them. And then any game that it looks like we should almost certainly win, let's play Kawhi, because they will win for the, like, 95 times out of 100 with him on the court against a team that's not great. I mean, it's a smart way to do it. It's just, as a fan, I wanted to see Kawhi against Giannis, but I get both sides of the argument. It's just, you know, like, I think the problem is just going to be is, you know, ESPN is paying the NBA an absolute boatload of money. And when Kawhi Leonard doesn't play against Giannis, I think, unfortunately, the problem is not is little Jimmy sitting in the stands wants to go see Kawhi Leonard and the NBA is sad that the child doesn't get to see his great player. I think the NBA just has to deal with ESPN's paying us billions of dollars or whatever it is, and we're not delivering the best product that we can. And so I think the reality is that's probably what the NBA is dealing with, even though it would be nice if it was more wholesome.
Yeah, facts.
Okay, one more topic, and I'm going to get us out of here because I do have to get us rolling. That's why we started early. I want to see how you guys feel about how the start of the season is rolling for this Lakers team. The Lakers lost that first game up against this Clippers team that we're talking about. They have won 6 games straight, in which in the last 3 games, LeBron has had his 3 triple-doubles back-to-back-to-back, and he's on a consecutive streak. A lot of people are saying the league needs to take note on what's going on right now because he's not only just putting up those 17, 10, and 10 games right now. No, he's giving you like 30, 13, and 16. Like, you're seeing numbers right now. So I want to see how you guys feel about that. Tom, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the Lakers and LeBron as well.
Sure. I mean, count me as a Lakers fan who was – in the boat that felt like we gave wasn't upset that we traded for Anthony Davis because I understood why we did, but I was in the boat who felt like we gave up a little too much, right? I felt like we could have maybe not given up Josh Hart. I felt like we maybe could have not given up a draft pick. Man, like, I thought I understood that Anthony Davis was good, but, like, oh my God, I've never really watched a player like him where it's just this legit 7-foot guy. I guess I've seen Durant, but he's different than Kevin Durant because he's so dominant just like on like defense too. He's this 7-foot guy who takes guys off the dribble, defending. And then, you know, newsflash, LeBron James is good at basketball too. So, like, you know, I think he's certainly not washed. I do have some worry about, you know, you want to talk about someone who should be taking games off. I think he is certainly one of them. I hope he's not coming out to try and play 82. I want them to be smart about him. But to me, and, you know, this is the last thing I ever expected to say, the story of their season so far has been Dwight Howard. Like, not only did I write that guy off as a basketball player, I wrote him off as, like, a human being. And, like, he's been – really, really good. Like, I think so many people try and draw a comparison to, like, Draymond Green and, you know, this guy will be this person's Draymond and whatnot. No one really is. But Dwight Howard has been, it's only 7 games, right? But, like, he's not demanding touches on the block. He's not demanding any offense at all. He's getting his offense when it's open. He's guarding perimeter players. He's setting unbelievable screens. He's protecting the rim. I mean, he's been a revelation for that team, which is completely insane to think about. And so whether he can keep that up, I'm not sure. I think Danny Green has been really good. I think they're missing a perimeter scorer. I think the reality is, as excited as I am about the Lakers after watching pretty bad teams for the last 5 to 6 years, I just think the Clippers are a monster. I just like they're. I mean, I just don't see how LeBron will have to play Herculean to be able to score against Paul George and Kawhi Leonard the entire game. But, you know, I guess the other thing you can say to that is that who guards Davis and who guards Howard? I mean, the Clippers have Ivica Zubac and a very undersized Montrezl Harrell. So the Lakers do present problems. I just think in 2019, having bad matchups on the wing is more important than having bad matchups down low, which is kind of the inverse of what it was in 2009 when the Lakers just have Bynum and Powell. So, I mean, look, I'm excited about the Lakers. I think people should give them all the credit in the world. I think just right now, if you put a gun to my head, I don't think they can beat the Clippers in a 7-game series. But then again, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, so anything is possible. And we have to see if Paul George comes back looking the same. And if he does, then I think the Clippers are extremely dangerous. And if he doesn't, then, I don't know, Lakers look really, really good. So it's just exciting to see a good team again. And it's been fun to watch LeBron and Davis together. The only thing I wish is that LeBron was a few years younger, because then I think you'd really have a few years of unbelievable basketball coming. But I think they can really only keep this up for a couple of years, really, to shift some things around.
Yeah, but they can't continue to keep spoon-feeding LeBron. Screw all of that. It's like now he finally gets a bomb squad and he's back to what he looked like in 2011, 12, 13, and 14 in Miami. Like, come on. Come on. They can't keep doing that. Everybody else had to earn their team, and LeBron is looking like a well-conditioned robot now because he got pieces around him. But I'm not knocking it. That's your team. You know what I'm saying? It's looking like Showtime may be back in purple and gold, but I like the commercial they got because they're saying the Showtime is back in the 213 and Paul George is talking junk, but Paul George didn't get out there on the floor yet. And I think once Paul George comes back for the Clippers, it'd be one thing. But, you know, watching how they both are, you know, trying to hold that arena and the city of Los Angeles down is one thing in itself. Royce, your thoughts on the Lakers and how they've been able to put together this string of wins, 6 straight after they lost on opening night, and LeBron off to this triple-double streak that he has right now?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, why would I be surprised after, you know, one game? Like, it was one game against the Clippers on opening night. I wasn't going to make a whole lot about that, and it wasn't going to change my mind, especially when you're asking me, of all people, timeless. I mean, July 12th, 2019, I was already, you know, predicting that the Los Angeles Lakers would play the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA Finals. And the best duo in the NBA is hands down LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Why? Because LeBron James is still arguably the best player in the league. Why? Ahead of all the conversation about Kawhi Leonard. Because I never saw Kawhi Leonard take a team that looked like LeBron James' Cleveland Cavalier team to the NBA Finals and win it.
Wait, what about Toronto? Toronto's not in that discussion?
Toronto is deep and talented, has a great offense and a great scheme and a great coaching staff, and it wasn't really about the talent that was not there before Kawhi Leonard. It was about the fact that that team couldn't get past LeBron James, who was single-handedly holding them off when they had DeMar DeRozan. So you swap out DeRozan for Kawhi. At the same time, LeBron vacates his presence in the Eastern Conference. I just think that the narrative has been written like Kawhi Leonard is just so great of a player. And that doesn't mean he doesn't have greatness, but I'm saying he's no LeBron James. LeBron James is not ever been cut of the material that Michael Jordan was fashioned from. He was always from the Magic Johnson cloth, meaning I am a point forward. I am 6'9". I'm 270, 280. I'm a locomotive. I see the floor. I'm going to make the right play if that means pass the ball for somebody else to take the game-winning shot before I feel like it's about me. I got to get my shots up.
I got to get my numbers. When LeBron James is thinking, I got to get my numbers, he's thinking, I got to get 27, 7, and 7. That's what he's thinking. However, you know, be close to averaging a triple-double, making the right play, and making sure that my team is winning and I'm associated with winning. Whether it's regular season or postseason, his name is synonymous with winning. And, you know, this is a great Laker team. And so when you talk about the dynamic duo and what it is that Anthony Davis brings to the table with his length, his defensive prowess, and the fact that when you put – depends on how who's calling it, the 4-5 pick and roll, if LeBron's playing the 4 and AD's playing the 5, or you could call it the 1-5 if LeBron's actually playing the point and AD's playing the 5 or the 4 – either way, pick your poison. Then when you actually add a Hall of Famer who's been getting the bummest of raps for the last few seasons in Dwight Howard, how is this not a lethal trio? Yes, he was injured last year, but 1 year removed before he showed up in Washington, you look at his season in Charlotte, he was still putting up franchise center statistics. Averaging a double-double, record-setting numbers in Charlotte as their starting center prior to being hurt in Washington. Now he realizes, you know what? I have an opportunity to be on the best team I've ever been on, and I don't have to be the second best player, let alone the franchise player. I can come off the bench. All I got to do is rebound, which I'm one of the best rebounders since I entered the league. All I got to do is call out the defensive rotations, alter shots, block shots. I don't need any touches. It was easy for him to just see what it was and make all the right statements and then to just come out and execute. It's like, well, I've been here before. I know the city. I know the lay of the land. And look, this is just like being on Team USA if I'm Dwight Howard. I played with LeBron. I played with AD. Like, we've been here. We've actually done this before, whether people remember it or not. I was just at a different spot in my NBA career and how fans and writers were seeing me and talking about me. Now we're acting like this dude is like something he's never done before. And it's like, this is too freaking easy. And they're big.
Nah. Yeah.
They're smart, they're experienced in a very young league across the board. It's gonna be an easy romp, in my opinion. If everybody stays healthy, it's gonna be an easy romp throughout the regular season. And it's in the postseason when the game actually is played different and play like it has always been played in the postseason. You cannot just run up and down in the playoffs and fire away from 3-point range and think that's how you're winning a title. You must go inside out. You must rebound and get to the free throw line. The team that rebounds the best and shoots the best or the most free throws and the best percentage oftentimes is going to win the NBA title.
Yeah, I think I definitely want to echo some of the things that you said there. I think the key about Dwight right now, and I think actually Kobe Bryant said this, Dwight Howard, I mean, it's important to remember here that if Cousins has not torn his ACL, there is a very, very good chance Dwight Howard is not in the NBA this season. He was not signed. I think Cousins tore his ACL in, like, September, and Dwight Howard was not signed. And the thing that Kobe said, right, is that you don't really realize – it's the old – like, you don't really realize how much you like something or love something until it's taken away from you. And I think even if you look at the Charlotte season where Dwight was putting up really good numbers, and what everyone always said about Dwight is, look, the NBA's changed, right? Like, you don't post people up on the block anymore. And Dwight was never that great at that anyways, right? And so forever, up until this season, really, like, Dwight Howard, people begged him, just play defense, roll to the rim, pick and roll, get your offense when it comes to you. Don't ask for the ball on the block. That's not how the game's played. And this is the first season, and we're only 7 games in. And so when you have a career sample size of someone doing something else, and then they change it in only 7 games, you have to doubt it a little bit. But I will say this, this isn't like, you know, JaVale McGee has decided to not be crazy anymore. This is Dwight Howard. Like, this guy is a Hall of Famer. This guy does – he was close to an MVP for a year or two. He beat LeBron James when LeBron James was in his prime in 2009 or 8, whatever that was. He was Defensive Player of the Year three different times. A guy like this figuring it out, if he can stay healthy and keep this mindset, that is a game changer. I think the only reason I'm skeptical on the Lakers versus the Clippers a little bit is that this should, like, people are going to want to compare LeBron James to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And, like, those comparisons are pointless because here's the comparison I guarantee you. I guarantee you LeBron James' 35-year-old season is going to be a hell of a lot better than Kawhi Leonard and Paul George's 35-year-old season. Unfortunately, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are 7 years younger than him. So LeBron James is going to have to basically pull off something that is very rarely done, which is you have two guys who are coming up in the league who are both, if you had to pick two guys to defend a LeBron James who can also play offense, you'd pick Kawhi Leonard and you'd pick George. And so that's really difficult. But I think what the difference is, and I think kind of the best way to put this, is there are certain superstars in the NBA that raise your floor. And by that, I will say DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, guys like that who make it very difficult for you to be bad. But there are very few superstars in the NBA that raise your ceiling. And the thing I'll say about Anthony Davis watching him, he raises the Lakers' ceilings to unlimited levels. I just have not – like, I'm guilty of not watching a guy. Like, I just haven't watched him that much up until and I think that's probably why he wanted to get the hell out of New Orleans. Probably not many people know that he's this good. And, like, I am just – I'm blown away by this guy. Like, he – I think the reason that LeBron and AD are such good, like, pairing – A, they really complement each other, but B, I think AD has a tendency to sometimes have these games where he scores like only like 17 points or only gets like 10 boards, something like that. And it's still a fantastic game. But when your second best player is Jrue Holiday and no one else, you lose the games when AD doesn't show up. Now that he has Braun, like, AD is capable literally of like a 50 and 25 at any given time. He's capable of guarding the point guard, the center, the wing, like, he can be basically a one-man defense. His ceiling is unlimited. And if he manages to put it together for 16 games in the playoffs, they can win the title. It's just he has to do that. LeBron James, as amazing as he is, as fantastic as he is, he's 35 years old. And maybe he beats Father Time and defies everything, but most people don't. And so for the Lakers to win, AD's going to have to take his game to another level when it matters the absolute most. And they're going to have to stay very, very healthy because their depth is not great. So they're going to have to get to the playoffs intact fully, I think. And if they do, yeah, I mean, I kind of like said this earlier, but the key, I think, is that the Lakers are going to have home court advantage every game that they play the Clippers. And I don't think that's – I can't remember a situation like that in NBA history, but – and the Clippers will not have one home game in that entire series because I don't care if it's a Clippers home game. Lakers fans there will be at least 50% Lakers fans there, at least. And I'd be shocked if it was not more. So that's an advantage that not many people are noting yet.
I still think they're comfortable, though. And they didn't play that first game without Paul George. Just imagine Paul George on the floor. And this is another spicy dish that I'll throw in the kitchen, and I have to save it for later because I do got to get out of here. The most – well, I'll say top three because I think there's two other players that I could put in the discussion. One of the most unguardable players in the league in Lou Williams. Lou Williams can do everything that old Iverson could do. Like, I don't think he has a yank up, and when I mean yank up, I mean like the crossover yank. I don't think Lou has that, but everything else Iverson can do to get that ball out of his hands, Lou Williams is doing it, and it's hard to defend him. You might end up fouling him because how creative he is with the ball. So you just have to think about that. Hasn't been on the floor with Kawhi, and that hasn't been on the floor with Paul George yet. So the Lakers will have their hands full on battling Hoops Arena, that is, this season. But right now they are off to an interesting start. And just like we just mentioned, all of the pieces that they do have, and once Boogie feels comfortable and in NBA condition, they have at least three to four bigs that you have to worry about every single game. Like that's the scary part about the Lakers. I'm just impressed that Frank Vogel's been able to put this together the right way. And oh yeah, if it were up to me, I wouldn't even compare LeBron to Michael Jordan. I still compare him to Magic, and I'm still giving Magic the leg up over LeBron. I'm sorry. Okay, so I need the plug and close out. We just lost Tom, so Royce, you already know what to do. Thank you for getting into this cafe and mixing it up. Give me a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we get out of the doors of Sports City.
Hey, man, great stuff. I enjoyed it once again. Apologies, you know, like I said, time kind of got away, but it was great kicking around what's happening in the league. Nice to hear from Tom and chop it up with him, make some excellent points. So everybody just tune in tonight and let's see what's going on with Kawhi Leonard if he shows up to take on the Portland Trail Blazers.
And like I said, in the midst of my you know, running it down earlier in the show, even though it was a mishap that turned into a fortune within my family, though, the mishap was John Collins getting suspended for 25 games, but up was called. My cousin, a.k.a. Buddha, Charlie Brown Jr., got called up. So he'd be out there playing. Hopefully he could impress them to stay on that sideline and get in there and make an influence for the team. But I'm definitely happy that he finally got the suit up for a game in the regular season. He got some preseason ball and summer league ball. But to see him get out there and be on the sideline, at least for now, even though they lost the game last night, I'm truly proud. And knowing that he's close to me, closer than my other family members, but just knowing that this is, it's a blessing. I'm happy for you, Buddha. I'm still cheering for you. Sports City, stay tuned. The Aaron and Tyler Show will be back tomorrow. Tuesday, I have the biggest guest appearing in Sports City history. That's right, the biggest guest I have featured Tuesday. Y'all stay tuned on that one. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.